I'm really excited for Jonas to be here with us tonight. Brian Payne has been talking about Jonas for quite a while. They work together out there at Woodall Dairy, and Brian kind of shares, I think in the deacons group, but also in my Sunday school class, about the neat stuff that, how he's seen Jonas and God working in his life, and just what a neat testimony he has, and trying to get him to come and share, and finally worked it out. And we're just so excited and looking forward for you sharing what the Lord has done in your life. If you come up here and let me pray for you. This is Joseph Brenneman. And I told him, I said, I don't know many Brennemans in these parts here. And I guess he'll give us a story. I've been asking him a lot of other questions. And I said, I guess I better shut up. You're probably going to tell us in the testimony anyway. And he is. But let me pray for you, okay? Lord, I thank you for this opportunity we have tonight to hear this brother in Christ to come and share his story, how you've worked in his life and how you're continuing to work in his life. Lord, bless him, use him, encourage him, strengthen him, give him boldness and confidence to speak the truth. But Lord, let him testify and glorify you in his life this evening. In Jesus' name, amen. God bless you, brother.
It's an honor to be here, and it's always scary when I stand up here and see everybody looking at me expecting me to say something, because I'm not much of a talker. But I'm glad to be here, and I'm just grateful what God has done in my life, and I want to share a little bit about that the best I can. And as y'all know, I came from the Amish background, and so I want to tell you a little bit about that. I've not met many people that are down on the Amish. They just mostly misunderstanding, and they just don't know, really, they get confused. And so let me get a couple things, separate them for you. And there's three things that commonly get confused, and that is faith, Christianity, and religion. They're three separate things, but usually everybody puts them in one bundle, and that's not how it works. Faith is something that you have, and religion is what you do, but Christian is a born-again believer in Jesus Christ, and there's a big difference in that. And the Amish actually have all three, and I personally don't like religion because it misleads people. It gives people the idea that you can do this, and when you do this, then you'll have this. But religion should be you do this because of what you have, and that is a faith in Jesus Christ. And the Amish believe, and they believe this to be God's holy word. Just and the faith is almost identical to a Baptist. I mean, it's really similar, but the religion, as you know, it varies quite a bit. And for me, growing up, I was in a well-based Christian home. My dad is a preacher. He's a very powerful preacher, actually. If he goes places up in with him, we have a kinfolk in Pennsylvania. If we went up there for a week, they'd just call church in the middle of the week just to hear him preach. And so that I grew up under him, and he's a man I really think a lot of. I have my Heavenly Father, which is the world to me. He's number one, and number two is my earthly father. He really means the world to me. He's, from what he's taught me and what God has done, has brought me here. It's the only reason I'm here. But just growing up in the Amish family, it's a lot different than what y'all grew up in. It's basically, if you go back about 75 years, that's what I grew up in. I just made a fast transaction. But we're done without a lot of stuff, as you know, no electricity, television, radio, none of that, which is no big deal. If you never had it, then you really don't miss it that much. You know, it's just no big deal. But I know, looking from the outside in, it looks quite a bit different, but it's you never had it, you don't miss it. But it's still a struggle, it's still a temptation. And but my family is a very religious and very faith-oriented family. My dad has a deep faith in Jesus. And we have, when we get up in the mornings, we always had prayer even before breakfast. We always had prayer before a meal, and the Amish do prayer before and after the meal both. So we had that three times a day, you know, meal three times a day. We usually all was there for every meal time. There's times, especially the older you get and you get to working elsewhere, you miss a meal or so. But for the most part, we were together growing up, all sit at one table, and that's a pretty big table. I have eight brothers and four sisters, so, you know, that stretched out quite a bit. And it's never a dull moment when you have 15 people in one house. That's quite lively, and it's a joy. But for me, I was always a loner. I always kind of went off to myself. But and just with really a faith-based family. There's no reason for the way I went. I mean, just absolutely none. I wanted to just share a few things so you can see how God has worked in my dad's life. I was born in Delaware, and I think I was 6 when we moved to Columbia, Kentucky, and then about 10 years ago we moved over here. But growing up in Delaware, it's really a fast-growing. Dover is just exploded, and there was houses all around us. Dad said, this is not a good environment. I don't want to raise my kids up in this. And so he moved to Kentucky. How he found it, I don't know. But it's really out in the sticks, and the language was completely different. He was plowing a field one day, and a neighbor came up to him and said, how much you lack? And none of us had a clue what he meant. So we had to relearn the language too. But there was times that we just didn't hardly have any food. We really struggled, but we always had faith that God would provide, and He did, even though there was days when we had potatoes 3 times a day, and we had some other stuff, but, you know, it was slim picking. I can remember one time my parents said, well, we're going to go to town and get just the bare necessities, and me, German or Pennsylvania Dutch is my first language, so English was a little bit, I was still learning then, I was small then, and they said, we're going go get the bare necessities, and I thought, well, that's kind of odd, you know, they come back, and I thought, they're going through all the stuff, you know, seeing what they bought, and I said, well, where's the bare necessities? I don't... But God always did provide, and he just prayer and trust in God. And that's what I grew up in. My mom, with my youngest brother, she was 8 months pregnant and went into shock, and they took her to TJ Sampson's, and from there they life-flighted her to Louisville, and didn't know if she was going to make it or not. They took my youngest brother out of her. He was 2 pounds, 13 and a half ounces when he was born. A month early, lungs wasn't fully developed, and he made it okay. He's still with us today. He's a little feller, but he's still with us. And my mom was laying there, just didn't know if she was going to live or die. The doctor said, we've done everything we can do. There's nothing we can do. Would you like for us to pray for her? And Dad said yes. And so all the nurses and doctors gathered around her bedside, held hands and prayed. And I have a mama because God answered that prayer. I don't know what I've done without her, but I thank God for that. And me growing up in all that, and I still chose the wrong path. I was about 14, 15 years old, and when I became the age of responsibility, age where I realized I had a choice whether I could go one path or the other. Just like everybody, when you get to that age, you make a choice. And for some, it's a lot younger. There's some 5 or 6 years old realize that. I didn't realize it till I was older. But every one of us has a path we can choose. We can either choose to accept Jesus Christ, or we can choose the devil for a father. And we all know where that leads. But I grew up, and I started longing for things that we didn't have. I just wanted just a little bit more than what they thought was good. And the reason they don't have those things is they try to take the temptation away. They try to minimize the temptation because, well, we know that television can be a good thing, but it's a lot misused. There's a lot of garbage. Well, there's not much good on it anymore. And so they try to take that away. The radio, it can be a good thing, but there's also a lot of bad. And so they want to just remove the temptation, but the devil finds a way around that. He found a way into the garden, and he can sure find a way in every other life that ever lived. And I started looking at these things, and I wanted some. I just wanted just a little bit more, just a little bit more, and I started lusting after them. And the more I lusted after them, then I'd just take a step towards them and just drawing away from the faith of what I should have been. And the further I got, then when I got just a little bit of it, if I think I'd get caught, then I lied about it. And it just snowballed. And there's a lot of people that feel with that because they've been there. It's not a big step. Nobody wakes up and says, well, today I'm going to murder somebody. First, there's always the thought. And you harbor that thought, and it just grows and grows. And that's what I've done. And I just wanted more and more things. More. I just didn't want the Amish anymore. I just wanted out. I just wanted something else. But even though I was going to church, I went to church. They have a church every other Sunday. And the reason for that is, I think it comes, let me back up a little bit and tell you a little bit where the Amish come from. They originated in Switzerland back in somewhere around the 1600s. And they come off the Roman Catholic Church, and they didn't believe in baptism, baby baptism. They once they got a hold of the Bible, then they realized that the Roman Catholic Church was wrong, and they wanted out. And there was a man by the name of Jacob Ammon, which in German is Jakob Ammon, and he was the start of the, now that was the Amish founder, the Menno Simons founded the Mennonites, and that's originally where the Amish come from. There was a church, and Jakob Ammon was in the Mennonite church, and he found several things he didn't think they was doing quite right, so he caused a split, and that's where the Mennonite and the Amish come from. They both started from the same church. They just split out and wandered their own separate ways. He tried later to get them back together, but it was already too late, and we know how church splits work. It's not a good thing. But they was, and during that time, there was heavy persecution, real heavy. They was getting killed just all over the place for their faith in Jesus. And there was a story, it's probably the most common told story of that period in time, of a man. He was jailed for his faith. They put him in jail somehow. He got out, and he was running away, and had an officer chasing him, and he ran out across a lake with just real thin ice on it. He was just going right across, and as he was going, he was cracking the ice behind him. The officer run up behind him and fell through the ice, and he turned around and helped the officer, his enemy, pulled him out of the water and saved his life. And the officer took him back, caught him, and killed him. And that's just what they was going through. There is stories, just there's a book named Martyr's Mirror, and it's probably that thick. It's a big book, full of stories of that period in time. And that's the reason that they came to America, was to seek freedom of religion. They wanted to be somewhere where they could worship God without all that. And so that's where they come from. And even though I knew all that, I still chose the wrong way. I just strayed away from it. And the more I got, the more I wanted. The more I got, the more I wanted. And I just wandered further and further away. And I got baptized in the Amish church. I was considered a member. I didn't accept Jesus as my Savior. I regret it deeply that I done that, because it mocks everything baptism stands for. But I did it anyway, because I just wanted to show everybody, I was doing good, I was okay. But I never was at peace. I just wanted other things. I wanted to go out in the world. So I did. I started doing things I shouldn't. I've been in terrible things. And finally, I just left Amish completely. Just went out in the world and embraced it for all it was. I've been in places that I don't even want to talk about. I've done things that I'd rather not think of. I was drinking. I was doing a lot of things. We all know what drinking leads. When you drink, there's a whole bunch of stuff that goes with it. And I was doing all of that. I went through a depression during that time. And it was a real bad time in my life. I was so low that I thought the world would be a better place without me. I considered taking my own life. I was that far down. And just through the grace of God, He brought two friends in my life that still to this day don't realize what they'd done. And my boss, I come up to him one night, I was just feeling really low. And he handed me my paycheck just like he done every week. And I said, thank you. And I was just being polite. He said, thank you. He said, you don't realize how much you mean to me. And that really changed my life. That just meant so much to me. Even though I knew my parents loved me, they loved me just so much. But I wasn't listening to them. I was pushing them away. My dad would sit me down and talk to me. Just time after time, he'd sit down and talk and say, son, you just can't do this. It's wrong. You're just going the wrong way. And one of the last times he talked to me, he sat me down. And he said, my son, I just don't know any other thing. But said, if you continue the path you're going, said, you're going to hell. And it sounds like a cruel thing for a son to say to his dad, but it was the truth. And that was the truth that stuck with me through all those years. And even during the time I considered taking my life, I thought, you know, just maybe, if he's right, you know, if there is a hell, because by that time I got so far from God that I couldn't see him anymore. And I thought, you know, if he's right, and if there is a hell, then I'll probably be going to it. And so that, even though that wouldn't have stopped me, it was that thought stuck with me. And I come out of the depression through two dear friends of mine. There was another friend that came alongside and just loved me and just accepted me and just helped me. And I got through all that, but I still wasn't satisfied. I still just wanted something. I just didn't know. I just couldn't find it. And I looked everywhere. And then God just started putting these thoughts into my head. Are we really here just by accident, or is there really a God? I mean, are we just in this time capsule called time, and after we die, we're no more, or is there more to it? And it's just a profound question. I mean, I'm not that deep a thinker. That don't come from me. Anybody that knows me knows that. But I was just, is there more to life than just this? And so I started looking. I said, man, somebody needs to figure out the truth. You know, what is the truth? What religion is right? You know, where do you look? I didn't know. I mean, I didn't know. I thought, well, somebody should do this, but I didn't have any means of finding anything out. I didn't know how to use the internet. I mean, I didn't have a computer anyway. I wouldn't go to the library, and I wouldn't touch a Bible for nothing, because that was something to do with religion, and I decided not to do that. That was not me. I didn't want nothing to do with religion. But I just kept on having these thoughts, and I just kept searching. Then one day, God revealed himself to me. And he just opened my eyes. It's the best way I can explain it. I looked at a tree, a big oak tree, and I said, you know, there's no way that can just be by accident. This big tree grows up here, drops a little bit of seed in the ground, and this little bit of seed produces another big tree. There's no way. I mean, just look at me, all the veins running through my body. It can't be by accident. And then I believed there was a God, and that really done some things to me, because if there was a God, then there were some other questions that had to be answered. And I was staying at a friend's house that time. I was watching the house, and like I said, I wouldn't have bought a Bible for nothing. I wouldn't have touched it, because that wasn't just something I just wouldn't do. But then there was a Gideon's Bible laying at that house. Somebody had left there, and I picked it up and I started reading it. And I just opened it, just read it, just wherever. It was the first time I'd ever picked up a Bible to really read it. Even though when I was Amish, we read the Bible every Sunday, at least every Sunday. And my dad would always have Bible study. If we wasn't in church, we'd always read the Bible. But this was the first time I'd picked up a Bible and really looked at it. I mean, it's written out in sentences. It's got periods. It's got commas. It's got all that stuff. And I read it with expression for the first time in my life, and it was just so revealing to me. But I still didn't know, could there be a Jesus Christ? I mean, this was 2,000 years ago. How in the world do you know if somebody lived 2,000 years ago? I mean, they didn't have cameras and all that stuff, you know. How do you know? And I found one fact that proved to me that Jesus Christ lived, and I was just, you know, wondering. And then I thought about the time. And I looked it up in the dictionary. I looked up B.C., before Christ. It's what it says it stands for. And A.D. stands for the year of the Lord in another language. I'm not sure what language it is. And I thought, you know, if all the time, because time from that counts down to this one year, and then from that year, time counts up. And if one man, they set the time around this one man who did no, he wasn't a big king or anything like that, and if they reset time because of him, he must have lived. And so I knew there Jesus Christ lived. And so I started just reading the Bible more. And Guthrie's Grove Church, where I go to, I'm a member now. I was there a few times. A friend of mine had some Christmas plays and things like that. And those are very, very helpful. If y'all do it, please continue. Because I went there and I walked in and I just felt welcome. They didn't ask any questions. They didn't do nothing like that. And I felt comfortable in that. So I started going to church. That, you know, I just felt like that was what you should do. If you believed in God, then you should go to church. And so I started doing that. But it still was something missing. I'd try to do good, but I just couldn't do it. Something that always distract me. I'd always get tempted, and I'd just give in, and I'd go the wrong way. But I just kept on reading the Bible and just how God is almighty. How in Joshua, when they was fighting the great battle, he stopped the sun till the battle was won. I mean, anybody that can stop the sun, that's almighty to me. How he parted the Red Sea and they walked through on dry land, that's almighty. And then I went through the prophecies, and I didn't read much of it, but there was enough that I realized that he foretold all these things, and they came out just exactly as he said. And that just amazed me. And I knew he was almighty, and I knew he was all-knowing. And then I read the Gospels, how he came, and he died for me. And I just couldn't figure that one out. Why in the world he would come? Because I read John 3:16. And I said, for God so loved me that he gave his only begotten son. And I was not worth dying for. I said, you know, why? It almost angered me, because for him to give his life for me, I wasn't worth it at all. But for him to give his life for me, and I looked at it, and I looked at it, and I still look at it today, and I study it. And there's only one reason he done that, and that's because he loved me. And that, it was so tremendous for me. It just blew me away. How much he loved me. I just didn't feel comfortable, but knowing that he loved me this much, I felt the responsibility. I said, you know, if he loves me this much and I don't do anything about it, then he died for nothing. And that, you know, all the pain he went through, all the suffering he went through, God himself died for me, and I don't do anything about it, then there's nobody to blame but me, and he died for nothing. And then one night I was sitting there, and that thought came back to my head, how Dad said I was going to hell. And all these things that I'd done just came rushing back. And I just, one by one, I looked at all the things I did, and I never felt so dirty in my life. It was horrible. And I knew that I was looking at hell. If God had took me right then, I said, you know, there's absolutely no other way, but I'm going to hell. And that was terrifying to me. I was so scared. I was so scared that I was going to die. But then I went to my bedroom and I knelt by my bed. And I said, God, I know I've sinned. And I said, I don't know if you can forgive me or not for all the things I've done. I said, I've done so many things, I don't know if you can forgive me or not. But I said, if you do, I will give you my life. And I will serve you for the rest of my life. I'll be your slave. I'll do whatever you ask if you can forgive me. And I didn't know, nothing happened, just nothing. I said, you said that not one sparrow falls to the ground without you. And I said, I'm not worth what that sparrow is worth. I said, can you please forgive me? I said, you said that our best is like a filthy rag in your sight. And I said, if our best is that bad, I can only imagine what I'm like. I said, is there any hope? Can you please forgive me? And I didn't know if he could or not. I thought maybe I'd gone too far, but I had to know. And I said, just maybe, because if not, then there's no hope for me. And I said, I'm staying here on my knees till I find out. And I was determined. I said, I have to know. And I don't know how long I stayed there. I have no idea. It might have been 1 minute, I don't know. It could have been an hour. It didn't matter. It was as if time was just standing still. And I the whole time, I could just feel the presence of God. It was like he was right there in the ceiling, just, now, is he really going to get all the way down? Is he really? Is he really there? And I was. I was desperate. I was willing to say whatever. If I didn't want to go back to the Amish, but I said, you know, if that's what's required of me, I'll do it just to be forgiven. I'll do whatever it takes. And I stayed there on my knees. And then the most amazing thing happened. It's like a wind just came and filled the room. It felt like it just picked me up. It cleaned me off. All that dirty feeling was gone. It was as if I was flying. I mean, I was floating. I stood up and it was amazing. I fell on the bed and I cried like I never cried before, because I knew that God had forgiven me every sin. He had made me brand new and given me a fresh start. And it was the most amazing feeling in my life. And since that day, I have not been the same. I have changed. It's that old life. There's no comparison whatsoever. It's the most, there's no way to describe it. I know when you're, before you're saved, you think, well, you know, they talk about all these things, but there's no way to describe it. It's once you're saved, it's so much better. It's so much richer. It's just an amazing feeling to know that God forgave you every sin. He's made you brand new. And I knew at that moment I was born again. I didn't know that I was gone. I mean, I hoped I was going to heaven, but I didn't know. I thought maybe I had to stay faithful to him. I didn't know. But I was willing to do that. And I just prayed to him every night, and I just stayed faithful to him. I read my Bible. I've read this book so much. I haven't read it all the way through, but I read it every day, and I hold it dearly. And it was one day I was so tired. I was just dragging. I didn't know how I could go on. I woke up in the morning, and I was so tired. I didn't know how I could go through the day. And I opened it up, and he said, I don't know if I can quote it exactly, but it was, I can't think of it right now, but talked about how every son whom he loves, he scourges and chastises. He talks about how he corrects us. And then I realized God was calling me his son. Now, that was amazing. I jumped up. Oh, man, that was wonderful. I wasn't tired anymore. I went all through that day. I wasn't a bit tired. I was so overjoyed. And it's been almost 3 years ago now, and it's been the most amazing 3 years of my life. It's like no other. All the life before that was as if nothing compared to these last 3 years. I'm so grateful to be here. I'm so grateful. It's a little over a year ago now. I'm not exactly sure, a little over a year after I got saved. So I didn't know, should I go back to the Amish? Should I stay this way? I didn't know, but I just knew that God would let me know. And I was willing to do whatever. And finally, one day he told me to join the Guptons Grove, and I got baptized again. And that was another changing event for me. Since then, it's just been so much better, so much richer. And I became a member of Guptons Grove Baptist Church. And while I was going there, Robin and Billy Kreider, their parents go there. Well, Bill's passed on now. But they would go there, and it was during that time that the Kreiders were driving to Nicaragua. And they come to church, and they say, we haven't heard from them. Could you please pray for them? It's a dangerous country when you go to driving all the way through Mexico and all the way down to Nicaragua. And we'd pray for them. They'd go home, and they'd have a message on their phone from them. And then I'd always ask Bill, I said, well, how are they doing? And one morning, I knew that I was supposed to go help them, because I knew they was going to be a struggling family. And then one morning I walked up to Bill and I said, well, how are they doing? He said, they're doing good. They got there and everything. And I said, well, you know, somebody needs to go help them. And I think I'd like to do that. And the whole time I'm thinking, what am I saying? What am I saying here? I don't like to go on foreign soil. I don't like to go, but I knew I had to go. So I had to ask where, what country they was in, what city they was in, and I had to go home. And I had to go find Nicaragua because I didn't know where it was. And looked up the language and everything. And this was, I went first time in July of last year and stayed there for a week with them. It was just an amazing week. I just learned so much and learned to appreciate life that we have here a lot more. Because of the things I've seen, it's really bad. And it's kind of like the Amish. They don't have that much, so they don't miss that much. They struggle, but they still, it's a lot harder for us to go down there. But while I stayed there for a week, and just, it was amazing to me, and I loved it. And while I was down there, I felt sure that I was supposed to go back in January. And so right then, I started making plans to go back in January. And January came, and the Kreiders was up here. And I planned on taking a small group with me. I had a few friends. They was willing to go, and I had made plans. I was looking at planes, tickets, and all that. And it looked really promising. And one day, within 24 hours, all the plans I made fell apart. That was really a shock to me. I went down on my knees. I said, what's going on? What's going on? What do I do? And then he revealed to me that I was supposed to go by myself. And that was really scary for me, because I didn't like stepping on foreign soil. And the Kreiders said I was actually going to be there a few days before they went back. But the interpreter Juan would be there, which I'd met him on the previous trip, 6 days and 6 months earlier. But I'd met him, you know, so it'd be somebody there that I knew. Well, it turns out that something come up and the Criders couldn't go back at all. And I realized God revealed to me that he wanted me to be there for 3 weeks. And the longest I've ever been away from home. That was really scary, but I was confident that God wanted me to go. And so I made plans, and I got on the plane all by myself, and I went to a foreign country where I only knew one person, and I didn't know him that well. Didn't know what I was going to do. All God said was go, and so I went. And it was the most amazing 3 weeks. I went down there, and we went and looked at a church that I'd seen earlier and seen some kids running around there. And so Juan said, well, we ought to do something for them, and because this empty church has been there for 3 years, and it's a terrible place, village. I mean, it's really, crime rate is really high. And he said, we ought to do something for him. You brought your computer? I said, yeah. And he said, well, we can get the Jesus film. I got a friend with a projector, so we'll hook it up and we'll show the Jesus film for these little children. And I said, well, okay. He said, well, we'll buy some snacks too, you know, just something a little bit afterward. And so that's what we done. And we'd bought snacks and drinks and a pinata. And that's really fun. It's the first time I ever seen one, but it's really fun. And so we done, actually, when he called his friend for the see if we could borrow the projector, he said, well, you know, we're setting up different churches, and we're moving some pastors around and getting everybody situated, and said that it would really help these pastors out if you could come to these different churches and draw children in. And so that's what we've done, and we've seen, went to 8 different churches, and we've seen over 700 people altogether. And so that was amazing to me. And that just shows what God can do. It wasn't me. Believe me, it was not me. It was all in what God can do. And I just want to encourage everyone here to just seek God, follow him. If you don't know him, you better come to know him, because time is running out. And this country here is going in a bad direction very, very fast. And the time to stand up is now. If we don't stand up now, this is the greatest opportunity for church that is seen in a long time, because of all the darkness that is out there. There's a lot of people like me out there searching, and they don't know what they're looking for. And if we're that light, if we follow Jesus and set the example for him, because every believer in Jesus Christ that has been born again is an example for Jesus Christ. How good you are is up to you. But if you follow him, then you can be a shining light, and they see something in that they want. I know how that is. It's really something to see somebody that has so much faith that even at the old age they can stand up and sing praises to God. That blew me away to see somebody, you know, how can they're facing death. You know they are, because, you know, I planned to die when I was 70, you know, that death wasn't none of my concern. But seeing somebody, you know, that's what they're facing. You know it is. And to see them just sing away and see such joy on their face. And that's what we need to do. We need to stand up, and we need to shine, because now's the time to do it. It's a time like no other. And the way this country's headed, we're going to face heavy trouble. We're going to face a lot of trials if we don't, and we have the choice. We can stand up, or we can tuck our tails and run. I don't want to tuck my tail and run. I've made that decision. I got to stand no matter what. But time is running out. We look at time and we think, well, it just, everything just keeps on going. It looks like it goes on forever, you know, year after year, just everything's the same. But it's not. God looks at time different than we do. When I first read that, you know, one day is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is like one day, I got to thinking about that a little bit. Jesus was born 2,000 years ago, but yet if one day is like 1,000 years, that means Jesus was born 2 days ago. God don't look at time the same as we do, but we know by all the signs that he's given us to look for in this book here, we know that it's coming to a close, and it'll be here soon. And we know that we face death. We have to face death. There's no other way around it. And we know that we have to be ready. If you're not ready, then you're going to hell. That's plain. It's two roads. It's a road to heaven and a road to hell. And we have a choice. And I thank God that he gave me a second chance. So I just want to ask you, what road are you on? I hope you're on the road to heaven. If not, you better make up your mind and change fast, because time is running out. And he is faithful, and he will forgive if you ask him. If he can forgive me, he can forgive anybody. I know that for a fact. He forgave me. He can forgive you of any sin if you come to him. But just don't wait too long.